Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by the law offices of Jeffrey M. Leving.
But no Bulls came back on defense, and Morant, for a second, dribbled right up to the basket. Yeah, he could have shot it if he wanted to.
Yes, he could have. And so that's going to do it. 101-90, Memphis beating the Bulls in Memphis, Tennessee. So the Bulls go 5 of 31 from three-point range, missing their last 15 attempts.
The unfortunate part today was, you know, it was unfortunate that this was one of our poor offensive games in terms of the shooting percentage, the numbers, in relationship to the fact it was one of our better defensive games. You know, I liked the way the game was. It was kind of a very physical, grind-out kind of game. And I thought our guys stepped up to that. And they really, really battled and competed. And, you know, obviously the fourth quarter, you know, wasn't a great quarter offensively or defensively for us. But for the most part, for those first three quarters, I thought we competed pretty well.
Not a great fourth quarter indeed for the Bulls, who are struggling to make this work. That was Billy Donovan. You heard the call on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's get inside the Bulls right now with a Bulls insider, Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times at J. Cowley Hoops. He is with us on our Twitch stream, so you can check out his handsome rabbinical visage. And he's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Hello, Joe!
I look like the Unabomber in some cabin, don't I?
Yeah, no, you got a really outdoorsy kind of feel, like Yule Gibbons and a big bowl of grape nuts or something. You need like a, a camo vest and get a bunch of fishing tackle behind you, right?
I am in Minneapolis, so it is time to look a little cabin-y.
So, we were asking people if they could go to a city where they know they wouldn't be found in the Continental 48 for like witness protection if you committed some crime. What it would be. I know you know of a place, Joe.
That I would go?
Yeah, I know you've thought about this. Or would think about it quickly.
Oh, yeah. I always think about, like, if the zombie apocalypse hits, where I'm going and stuff. Oh, yeah, without question. My wife has a bunch of, a lot of relatives up here have cabins up by Lake Bernard, you know, Brainerd, way past there. You go up there, no one's finding you.
That's what I said. I'm going to be outside of Duluth somewhere if people want to come looking.
There's nobody north of here for a long ways, yeah.
All right. See, I knew you'd know. I knew you'd have some sort of advice.
Not that I have a twisted mind and think about that, but I know where I'm going.
This new Bulls mix is working in fits and starts, and sometimes it looks terrific, and then they just decide they're not going to stop someone from getting somewhere. Last night was the first time in this rough stretch that the problems were offensive more than defensive. Right. Shots just weren't falling. But the pressing need for me, stop the ball. Keep people from getting where they want to go as easily as they are. What can they do?
Yeah, and I asked Billy about that yesterday pregame, about have they thought about a starting lineup that could kind of come out, because before yesterday, offense wasn't the problem. So I was kind of seeing if they're tinkering with the idea of a Troy Brown Jr., someone that, and it's not a rip on Satoransky, but when you just watch him have to fight through screens, there's more chase than there is a fight through. Yep. And you can't chase John Morant. And then that messes with your whole drop coverage, because now you got a guy, you know, John puts you on his hip, and he's fast enough to kind of do that little hesitation, put you on the hip, and then just explode where your big can't recover. And and that was my concern at the beginning of that game is, all right, I know Sato's kind of that lanky look over the top guard. He's not a grinded fight through the pick guard. And I thought pick and roll, they would have problems with that. I didn't foresee the offensive problems. And so my question to him was just about, you know, why not let Zach just kind of be that full point guard? You don't really have a true point guard anyway. Let him be that point guard, that facilitator, kind of flow into the offense and start that way, and maybe put a more of a defensive-minded guy out there like a Troy Brown Jr. to kind of help with Patrick Williams and his rookie wall that he seems to hit. And, you know, Philly had a good explanation. Every 10 games or so, they analytically sit down as a staff and look at, okay, what have the last 10 games looked like? And at that point, slow starts wasn't the problem, and I kind of broke that down. Their opening quarters have actually been pretty solid. Even the game without Zach, and I think it was either Utah or Phoenix, whatever game he didn't play, they were still solid offensively and making sure they weren't digging that first hole. But I think what you have to look at, when you look at the schedule, you got some physical, grindy foxhole teams coming up, Miami twice, the Knicks again, Memphis again, Boston. You're going to have that mentality, because the referees were letting that game go early yesterday. I thought a tone was set, you know, with the physicality. And again, there's just not that I'm going to be the dog that stops you, especially when it was, you know, 3 minutes left and they needed stops and they couldn't get them. To your point, they just don't have that physical wall that they can set up top and say, all right, go ahead and try and beat us. It's your best on our best. It just lacks. And to me, that's a big problem with the schedule they have upcoming.
How do you see Garrett Temple fitting in once he's like ready, or at least at more of a percent than what we're seeing right now as far as his availability?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, today's an off day. They're not going to practice. They go right into the Orlando game. Maybe he gets, you know, 12 minutes there to ease him back in it, but they want him to have some physicality in practice, some contact in practice. That wouldn't come till Thursday. So then by the time you ease him in there, okay, what are you looking at? 12 games left where you feel comfortable with him? So, yeah, he's on the radar. He is that guy. But is he enough of that guy? Is he enough? You know, to me, he's 20 minutes. And then who do you take out? Denzel's probably the odd man out then, I would guess. You know, so, yeah, I think he'll help. But it doesn't – there's a bigger issue than just Garrett Temple coming and helping with that. And, you know, I would have liked to have seen, and I tweeted this out earlier before the game, Zach, there's been times where Zach has stepped up and said, I got this dude. I got their best dude in the backcourt. And I would have liked to have seen Zach be that guy and not worry about, I don't want to put too much energy out where I offensively can't be a threat. Just throw that to the side. You can get 20-7 being Zach LaVine. Fall out of bed and do that. But I need someone who is an athlete that just wants to stop their ball handling athlete. And to me, that's still an ongoing issue that's going to go well beyond the rest of this season and probably into next year. Do they find that guy?
I'm still trying to figure out the Coby White puzzle too, because I know when it looks good, when the shot's falling and when he's just putting his head down and all he sees is the rim, he can get there. He can score. Yeah. And he can score instantly. But everything seems so in between when they ask him to do more. Like, if he tries to slow it down enough, he's not looking enough for his shot. And everything's right. A little bit, his reads are a little bit late. The spacing's always a little bit delayed. And even defensively, it's like all or nothing. Like, either he's tackling a three-point shooter or knocking a guy out of bounds or closing out too hard, or he's, like you say, going soft on one of the, allowing himself to be screened too easily. And it's making me crazy, Joe. It's making me crazy because I know how talented he is. And it just, I want to get some magical way of having all this stuff come together. And it just seems every time I start to like something, there's another thing I don't like.
I think the issue with him, and when he lost that starting job, he still hasn't recovered of what he wants to be and how he can be an impact on this team. There's times he comes in. I have not seen, even when he was a point guard, there was a lot of guys he would miss the open guy. He just wouldn't understand spacing and normal point guard mentality. But it's been really bad the last couple of weeks as far as missing guys, because I think he comes in and his mentality is, I got to get mine. That's my job. You know, they're telling me to be aggressive, blah, 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 blah. He just doesn't understand the flow of a game at times. And now when you take that starter off his title, I think it's even compounded. And you're seeing a guy that's trying to find his place as a rotational guy, and maybe a future rotational guy. Maybe that's all he eventually is. And he's looking for his place, his impact, the will he can put on a game, and he doesn't know how to do it. So I think there's times you see him overpassing. Then there's times you see him overshooting. You know, all of a sudden he's not finishing at the rim, and that's always been an issue with him. He's one of those guys that's just so north and south. There's not that there's not that wiggle. There's not that that you like to see in a point guard. It's just so just pew, pew, pew. And I don't know how you can coach that besides letting him play it out and understand that. I mean, you can show him all the film you want, but when you're going 100 miles an hour, you just open guy be damned. So, yeah. And to your point, the defense, stop chasing over screens on the wrong guys. There's guys you can chase over the screen. Then there's guys you can go under the screen. Know your personnel that you're guarding. Understand what they do. And to me, there's just too many moments where he just doesn't understand what he's doing out there defensively against certain guys.
You mentioned Kobe, and I did know of a possession that I really enjoyed watching in the third quarter, and it was the transition off of a Vooch block to Kobe.
Yep.
Kobe gets it down the court. It's a give and go to Valentine, and Valentine with a just fabulous pass to Vooch. And I just love that whole thing. But it was also part of a bigger problem. It was one of the possessions out of five where they had three turnovers. And when I combine all that's good and bad about the Bulls, I thought that that was a pretty good nutshell in of which to describe what we're seeing out of them.
Yeah, and look, that's been an ongoing problem from day one with this group. They foul too much. They don't have good ball handlers. They just don't. They don't have good ball handlers. They don't have true ball handlers. And I know everyone's beating the analytical drum of, you know, it's a positionless NBA. Yeah, okay. In some cases, it is a positionless NBA. But you still need that dude. You need that dude to understand playmaking, facilitating, putting guys in position where they can be the most successful, being smarter than the situation that's going on. They don't have that. I mean, and the turnovers, to your point, the untimely turnovers at the worst times, even in a game when they only have like 12 or 13 turnovers, and Memphis had more. It's when those turnovers are coming, the double dribble in a time where you can't double dribble. And, you know, I mean, just stuff like that. And so these are ongoing issues to me that aren't going to change with this personnel. That has to change in the offseason where you bring in guys to fix that. This group, you know, I mean, maybe some of the younger guys get a bit better at it, but they just don't have that guy that can be smarter than the part of the game where you need everyone just to say, all right, lead us, slow us down, run us, be that guy. And they don't have it. To me, they can develop that. It's not on this roster right now.
Our own Cody Westerlund tweeted this yesterday. Patrick Williams is scoreless in the last 45 minutes, 16 yep. seconds he has played. He hasn't scored since the 5:36 mark of the third quarter of the Bulls game Friday. The Bulls have played 89 minutes, 36 seconds since then. What's wrong with their top draft pick?
I would say, you know, there hasn't been much that I've disagreed with Billy on so far this season. I think he's done a really good job considering the plate of food he's been served. The Patrick Williams thing is frustrating to me. I would make it a point to make sure he is offensively connected the way Tibbs would offensively connect Carlos Boozer in the first quarter. The first quarter, it was just like, we know Booz ain't touching this ball in the fourth quarter. That's going to be Derek Luol time, Joakim, garbage, you know, grabbing garbage rebounds. Boozer just unfactoring. He's going to be a rebound guy. But we're going to make sure we establish him in that first quarter. And I wish they would take that approach with Patrick Williams. I don't want to hear about how he's 19 anymore. You're not 19 when you put that much time in your first season. You're not. You're just not. You're not your normal 19-year-old. My son is 19. I look at his body, and then I look at what Patrick Williams brings to the court, and it might as well be an alien because I'm like, oh, my goodness. So you're not a normal 19-year-old. Take advantage of that. And so I really wish they would start going out of their way, because he's just a lost player out there right now. It's just almost he's taken in the mindset of, I'm just going to be a stopper. No, that's great. That's great initially. But now we need you to be a factor, because when he goes to the hoop, bodies move. The opposition moves, whether they are moving out of the way or whether they are trying to stop him and are just bumped off him like dirty laundry, they move. And you have to take advantage of a physical person like that, especially on a team that needs physicality. So I think they need to establish him. They have a good enough passing. Vooch is a good enough passer. They have to look to establish plays with him. And I know that's not Billy's offense, is to have set plays like that. It's more of just flow and just make the right shot, read the right shots, and get your generate guys in the right spot. But I need you to set something up with this kid where he kind of is engaged and doesn't get lost, and all of a sudden it's the fourth quarter and he gets his first basket. Can't have that from the fourth overall pick. You just can't. I don't care what the offense dictates.
But don't you think, after all the physical ways he's described his season so far, whether it's his chest burning from guarding a player, or like his exhaustion after facing Kawhi, and I know that was early, but do you Correct. Think that he has faced a little bit of that rookie exhaustion? You and I talked to Kobe White when they had that stretch in December of all the games in a short amount of days, similar to what we're seeing now this year. And that's when that set in.
If I saw the entire rookie class that's been playing that kind of minutes, all hitting a wall, but I'm seeing dudes still going out there and performing in that rookie class. You know, obviously he's only missed one game, credit to him, because the best ability to have is availability. And so, you know, just missing that one game, I think, says a lot about him and the response. I get it. He's guarding arguably lots of times one of the better perimeter players on the opposing team. I get it. But, okay, you got to get yours, though, too. And so if you hit the rookie wall, all right, you know what? 19 games left. At some point, you got to get through that rookie wall. And if I was seeing that entire class that didn't have Vegas, didn't have mini camps, didn't have summer leagues to work with guys, didn't have the extended practices, and I saw that whole class hitting the wall, then I'd be like, all right, I get it. You know, these guys were given a bad hand to begin with. But I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing some of these rookies starting to say, okay, I got my second win, let's go. And so, there has to be more from him over this final month to feel good about going into next season.
Are we going to talk about that John Morant alley-oop dunk on the baseline? Because, man, look, when you can look in fast motion like you are in slow motion, and when he got that thing completely behind his head and even sort of turned and did a little wink at the camera. I mean, that had a little bit of everything. We can't normalize that. I know the NBA is spectacular, and I know things happen. I know we get our top tens on Twitter all the time, but oh man, that was like fall off the couch, roll around on the floor. Great.
Yeah, I mean, you instantly put that. Look, I've seen, there's been three head shaking moments this year as far as dunks. The Bridges dunk over Capella to me is number one.
Oh, that was dirty.
You weren't dunking over some backup like Anthony Edwards was that comes off the Raptors bench, and you're like, Waka? What? Who's this Waka or whatever? This was you dressed down a grown-ass man that blocked people for a living. And so that's number one. Morant is right up there, though, because that, I think it was very Derrick Rose-esque.
Yes.
With the violence. And there's a lot of ways he plays Derrick Rose-esque.
But more graceful.
That's what I was just going to say. There's not that, and before the knee even went with Derrick, you were like, how long can he just like that and twist right. and torque like that? Where Ja Morant has more of a Allen Iverson flow to him, but with the acrobatic violence that Derrick Rose played with. So there's definitely a mix there. Yeah, he's special. Look, I mean, when we talked about that draft class, Zion and him being generational, they have lived up to the hype and then some. So that was, to me, that was top three dunk of the year, just with how high he was. And when you see in slow motion, and like dude's looking down at the rim with the ball cocked.
Yep.
It's not like he's like looking up and, you know, he's looking down going, I'm about to do some nasty things to you. And so, yeah, that was special.
I feel like there's not as much downward force with Morant to get up as there is with like a D Rose. That's how I feel about it. Like there's not as much downward force to get up.
Derek kind of, I don't know, Derek, some of those Derek dunks from that MVP season and the year before were very, you know, he's a little more compact, a little sturdier looking than John Morant. But like Dan brought up, there's not that torque where you're like, that doesn't look like it's going to hold up. There's a little more grace to what John Morant does.
Yeah, Derek's explosive athleticism was raw, and it was really it was edgy and raw and angular, and it came at you in surprising ways. The way that Morant flows into his moments, he just sort of he blooms in those moments where Derek exploded.
Right, that's a good way to describe it. And I watched the Knicks game the other day. And Derek had two layups where you're like, there's not the height on them now. There's not the gravity, but there's still the twist and there's still the angle where the defender's like, how did he do that? So he still has that geometry on his side where he just knows how to twist in there and work the angles. There's just not the gravity that he used to have now, and that's understandable.
Yeah, I love this league when we get stuff like that, though, man. Few sports deliver moments like this one does, and when you get to see individuals doing things that just look just superhuman. Joe Cowley, thank you, as always, for taking the time and hunker down there in Minneapolis.
All right, the zombies are coming.
Thanks, Joe.
And he knows. He's not kidding. He actually has actionable information on the existence and the approach of the zombies. That is Joe Cowley. And members of the Zombies. And by the way, for previously, members of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Joe Cowley
and members of Husbands of Husbands.
There you go. That he joins us regularly to talk basketball. I've got some baseball information for you. You're wondering, how long does it take to know about the ball that we're using in MLB? The answer's not long. And we actually kind of know what we're doing and what we're seeing and why we're seeing it. And I will tell you what the ball is doing, because it's important that we know. Baseball is waiting to find out, and we've got the first returns on how it's behaving. I'll give you that info next on The Score.
Bam! Odyssey is your new home for all the audio that matters to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download the Odyssey app today to listen to The Score. An Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
The Weiss's crossover.
Bam!
Let's talk some baseball. Bernstein and Rahimi, Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's not sabermetrics. It's just measuring things right now, and we know that baseball sort of leaked out the fact that they tweaked the ball, and we were told the ball wasn't going to be quite as bouncy, that coefficient of restitution wasn't going to be quite the same, maybe not as elastic, but the problem's always been drag or lack thereof. So here's what we have. This is from the Joe Sheehan newsletter, and he says 11 days of baseball in April, a month in which there were zero games last year. Too early to draw conclusions as to the effect of the new baseball. It is, however, enough to check in and see where we may be headed. So I thought we would do that here. And in an effort to cut down the number of home runs, MLB intentionally modified the ball. They made it slightly lighter and decreased its bounciness. They did not test for drag on the ball. But here's what we know. Players are hitting the ball harder than ever based on league exit velocities, but they're getting less return for that hard contact. The higher drag is having an effect because the home run to fly ball rate is down from the 2019 records, but still historically high, second all time. Power looks like it did in 2017 and 2018, which is the most in history to that date. Batting average on contact, slugging percentage on contact, home runs on contact, all down year over year, despite increased exit velocities. The missing home runs have been turned into outs. Per FanGraphs, the batting average on balls in play is down 5 points compared to the same point in 2019. Singles on contact up slightly, doubles and triples well down. The strikeout rate would again be a record. What do you think the overall strikeout rate is? Just take a guess.
No, I don't want to. I don't like any of this right now.
Take a guess about what the total strikeout rate is.
Oh, fine. I'm going to say 25%.
24.8. Nicely done. Give that woman a cheroot. Well done. That would be a record if it keeps up. There are now 20%.
What is cheroot?
Yeah, give that man a cheroot, right?
Isn't what it is that?
I believe it's at like the old Midway carnivals where they would give you a cheap cigar. Look it up. Cheroot. I think it was an old term for an inexpensive cigar.
Isn't that
cigar.
The last name of Dwight in The Office? That's cheroot.
Spelled differently. Yeah. Colonel Potter used to say it on MASH. Give that man a cheroot.
Sorry.
Look it up. I'm going to see if I'm
didn't
right.
Didn't mean bog you down there.
No, pretty sure it's an inexpensive cigar. So there are 20% more strikeouts than hits in a baseball game.
Jesus.
Twice as many strikeouts as singles. He says the baseball we're watching in 21 isn't different from the baseball we've watched. The same game with a deadened baseball. The rate of three true outcomes. I heard Boog Shambi and JD talking about this last night. Homer strikeouts.
I did too.
Homer strikeouts and walks. Three true outcomes. 37%. It's up 1.6% over 2 years ago, heading for an all-time record. The walk rate will be the highest since the 50s. He says the figure for percentage of runs scored on home runs is 42.1, which is down from last year's full season, 43.7, but near the all-time high. That number rises as the weather gets warmer. Mm-hmm. He says that, and this is some of his conclusion here about the fairness or lack thereof in all of this, and I tend to agree. The change to the baseball has reduced the payoff for hitting the ball hard, which is maybe not entirely fair. I'm not sure how you could look at baseball the last few years and think, man, we should help the pitchers out. But here we are. Batters have to contend with the hardest throwing, nastiest spinning generation of pitchers ever. And if a hitter does get a hold of one, it's now an out more often than it was last year. He said there's the double bank shot idea. If you do this, if you essentially punish hitters for hitting the ball hard and up, they'll change their style. They'll all go back to hitting like Scott Fletcher. Wow, misdirected hate towards Scott Fletcher. Says it's a brand of the same erroneous thinking that blames hitters rather than pitchers. There's already a big incentive for batters to change their hitting style, which is the swaths of empty infield available when they come up to the plate. Batters haven't changed because hitting the way they do produces the most runs. They haven't changed because pitchers are too good. The modern style of hitting is a reaction to the evolution of pitchers. So giving pitchers baseballs that fly less far is just a gift. Says it's not an improvement.
You're on a crusade. It's a veiled crusade, but I'm on to you.
What?
You can't, like, you're not going to get what you want. Like, you're not going to get the mound moved back. Like, you're not going to get the mound lowered. You know that, right? Like, it's not happening.
But something has to be done to stop the real culprit. And that's the pitching velocity and all the nasty spin. That's what's thrown the game out of balance. It's not the baseball. It's not. It's the pitching. And I don't know what you do. I'm not on a crusade to move the mound back. I'm just saying I'm open-minded to putting a restrictor plate on the pitching to get the game back.
Okay, but feel me out on this. And I know we have to break. Fine. Dan can go on his crusade all he wants.
It's not a crusade. I want to fix baseball.
That's a crusade by definition, where you think you're going to go out with your agenda and save something. Yes, that is an actual crusade.
But it's not a specific. I'm not saying I want to move the mound back.
Don't get me stuck on mincing words and semantics here.
Fine.
I'm just going to throw this out. When you talk to outfielders, and we have one on retainer, P.S., who can tell you how they judge the ball when it flies when they hear the sound, because sound does matter and it helps, and we romanticize exit velocities and such. They can tell you that with the way that guy swung the bat, it shouldn't be going that far out of the ballpark. And that needed to stop. For a home run derby, no. But for everything else, yes. Okay?
But if you hit it, if you square it up and you make perfect contact, you deserve to get rewarded for that instead of punished.
You can't stop guys' arms, Dan.
Well, I guess you can't, but this is an existential baseball problem that makes the product awful.
I would also argue that the Cubs are suffering from this very thing.
How so?
I don't know. Look at all the numbers.
I would have to look at and see what their exit velocities are. Are they hitting it hard and having it not go out?
Let's look at their exit velocities relative to the rest of the major leagues and let's see what happens.
My guess is they're not hitting it very hard, especially when you look at their batting average of balls in play, which is also under 200, which is nearly impossible to do. That means you're making a lot of bad contact or you're unbelievably unlucky. So
we have a lot of hitting approach questions that we need to discuss. And I'm sorry to have to discuss some offhanded stream of consciousness with Craig Calcaterra, but we need to look into this. I'll figure it out. Okay, they're yelling at us to break. Sorry.
I know.
You want to take it to break or you want me to do it?
All right, 71 seconds of Blackhawks talk for the 45 thing on the score.
Premier voice of the White Sox and one of the top voices in baseball, Steve Stone, talks Sox three times a week on the score.
Soon down the road, Michael Kopech will move into the starting rotation. Let's talk 2021, this year. It's not necessarily what's best for Michael Kopech. It's what's best for the baseball team.
Don't miss Chicago baseball icon Steve Stone talking Sox three times a week throughout baseball season on Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
So you're scanning QR codes now?
Oh, are you kidding? I'm an old hand at that. The problem is I scan that, I get the Blackhawks game.
Nothing wrong with that. We watched some Blackhawks hockey last night, and they come away with a win. Jay Zawoski, our executive producer here on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, is also part of the Madhouse podcast. And, man, it's a whirlwind trying to keep up with who's on this team and who's playing and who's a healthy scratch and who's scoring goals. But I guess these are good problems to have when you're winning.
Yeah, it's two big wins against Columbus. They're in a playoff race, and those were games they needed. And it didn't look good for a while, but they came back and won. And two of the new Hawks, Brett Connolly and Riley Stillman, had big impacts on the game. Connolly scored the Hawks' third goal to sort of work the puck off the boards, walked into the center ice area and scored, which was great. And after the game, he was expressing his frustration with his experience in Florida. That's a guy who's had a lot of scoring success before, and it just didn't work out there, and he's very happy for a change of scenery. So hopefully the Hawks can get something out of him because he's got some time left on that contract. So he might just not be a pick up a salary to get some prospects guy. They might actually be looking at him for some offense.
Things I'm not used to talking about, Jay, when it comes to the Hawks. We touched on it yesterday. Cap space, which we mentioned was a new concept that we had to deal with here. And also the idea that they are putting in some pieces for their short-term and long-term futures. And I don't think that that's something that we really assessed when we were talking about it mid-trade deadline day yesterday.
Yeah, I think you're right. But if you listen to what Sam Bowman said before the season began, he's sort of, you know, telegraphed his moves here. That's what he's trying to do, a true rebuild on the fly. They're not going to sell everybody because they can't. No one's going to take $10.5 million of Patrick Kane. No one's going to take, you know, $6 million of Duncan Keith. So those guys have to be here. But they're adding assets. They're buying lottery tickets is how I like to say it. You know, you pick up Gaudette from Vancouver, who had some success last year but has dropped off. You trade Highmore for him. Low risk. All these moves are really low risk, high reward. And the more of these lottery tickets you have, the higher your chances are of hitting on some of these. So I really like what Stan Bowman has done. I think he did a great job yesterday. And, you know, the cap space thing, the way we were looking at it going into the deadline was, maybe they'll take on a huge contract, right, to get a prospect they like. Instead, they ate some of Matthias Janmark's contract to get that second draft pick. Those are ways to do it, too. It's not a ton, it doesn't have to be a ton of money, but the flexibility with the cap space allows them to say, you know what, give us an extra pick and we'll pay the contract. Vegas is happy to say, great, sounds wonderful. Here's a third-round pick and a second-round pick. The Hawks win, Vegas gets what they want, and everybody's happy.
That has been your 71 seconds of Blackhawks talk here on the 45 thing on Bernstein and Rahimi. Lawrence Holmes in transition next on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on the score.
If that Cubs offense gets downed by a bunch of runs, the confidence for them to actually get back in the game is extremely low.
30th in average, 30th in on-base percentage, 30th in WRC+, 28th in slugging. They can't hit!
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey station.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!